everyone. Thanks for joining us in Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. Parents and advocates are pushing back against the closure of 7 charter schools. HIV cases are climbing among gay Latino men. Local health professionals on the reasons why and what can be done to address it.
I'm hoping, you know, that we are sending out a message that you can be great.
And details on a runway show closing out Chicago Fashion Week. And now to some of today's top stories. A jury has been selected in Michael Madigan's landmark corruption trial. The final member of the 12-person jury was seated earlier today following days of questioning. But attorneys still need to finish selecting the 6 alternates. Madigan and his longtime associate Michael McClain are facing charges of racketeering, bribery, and wire fraud. Opening statements are expected to begin next week. For information on the jury selection process, check out our website. And the Chicago Board of Education's monthly meeting is being postponed. No makeup date has been announced for the meeting, which had been scheduled for a week from today. It comes after all 7 board members unexpectedly resigned amid ongoing turmoil between Mayor Brandon Johnson and CEO Public School CEO Pedro Martinez. Johnson has since appointed 6 new board members, and beginning in January, the board will expand to 21 members. 10 will be selected and 11 will be appointed by the mayor. For information on who's running in your district, check out our WTTW News Voter Guide. And there's one more errand you can knock off your list when you visit the grocery store: renewing your driver's license or getting a vehicle sticker using a kiosk. Illinois Secretary of State Alexi Janulis is announcing the Fast Lane pilot program. He says the goal is to give people an alternative to visiting the DMV. The process should take just a couple minutes, and customers will be able to print their renewal documents on site using the kiosk.
The kiosks serve as an alternative resource for people who don't have internet access or aren't comfortable with digital services. The kiosk will also provide printed verification of the transaction, which is great for individuals who don't have a printer at home.
The kiosk will be located in 15 grocery stores throughout the state. Up next, backlash over a slate of school closures. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Parents and teachers are pushing back over a plan to close 7 charter schools. This after Acero Charter Network announced it would close 7 campuses by the end of the school year, affecting more than 2,000 students and 270 teachers. Acero claims declining enrollment, rising personnel and facility costs, along with the network facing a $40 million deficit, is leading to the closures. But parents and teachers are fighting back, calling for Chicago Public Schools to observe the closures. Here to share their thoughts are Reina Rodriguez Delgado, president of the Santiago Parent Committee and Bilingual Advisory Committee. Her son attends Santiago. Minister Kaswani, a parent whose daughter attends Cenceros Elementary and whose wife also teaches there. And Lucy Salgado, who has 2 children at the Mayo Elementary. Now, we also invited Acero Schools to join us, but they declined. They sent a statement, which we will get to shortly. Well, thank you all for joining us. I have to start off. Let's go back to that day when you guys found out that they were closing the schools. Reina, I'll start with you. What was your initial thoughts?
So on Wednesday, October 9, exactly at 7:06, many parents, and I want to mention this, many teachers at the same time, got a text message on Square Parents saying that the school was closing. I was reading the paper, and I'm not going to lie to you. As I started reading the paper, when I saw my son's school name, Santiago, it felt like someone threw a bucket of ice water on me. I froze, and I started crying. All I could think was my son. He has an IEP problem. I was thinking what's going to happen with them. And I was thinking of my 224 students and my teachers, my family. Because this was Santiago.
It was a mix of emotions.
Till this day, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I just sit and I still cry. Because I just cannot believe why they closing such wonderful schools.
And I want to go to you. Your wife has been a teacher at St. Settles for 5 years. Were there any previous conversations for the possibility of closures?
She was not aware. Just like Reyna just said, everyone received a text message. We were watching it live on Facebook, and it was just heart-dropping, devastated, you know. My wife was very upset. Obviously, it's frustrating because you have a child and a teacher that both, you know, go to work together. They come home together. So now when we go from here, it's what's going to happen? We don't know.
And what about you? What was your initial reaction?
I was devastated. My kids were crying. They couldn't understand what was happening. Why did they do something wrong? All the kids in Tamayo are devastated, and they think it's their fault, and we're trying to reassure them. It's not. It's not. But as a parent, I'm going to keep fighting as much as I can, because I don't think it's fair that they didn't give us any time and they just decided to close all the schools just like nothing.
Would you say that schools end up turning like a second home?
It is a second home. My son's autistic. When he was diagnosed, they told me he was not going to be able to learn how to read. My son could read. He could read and write. That tells you something, that the school, that the staff, they're dedicated to what they do. It's a small school where we're all very close together. There's cyberbullying. Our Tamayo is 90% all the time full. We have the greatest teachers there.
So this is really a shock. I can feel the emotion in your voice. Reyna, as a president of Santiago Parent Committee, what's the biggest concern parents have so far?
Where are they going to put their kids at? What they're going to tell their kids? Like I told you, and like Lucy mentioned, for my school too, it was really shocking. And like I have mentioned in other interviews, I like to talk is from my school, you know. We have so many questions. I don't understand some of the things because my school, I mean, from all the schools, we have the highest attendance rate. So that's not an issue for us. Enrollment, most of our classes have a waiting list in our classrooms. Just today, and I want to mention because before I was coming here, we got a text message. Today we got 98.9% of attendance rate, meaning only one student was absent. What does that tell you? They love the school. So our parents are asking, what is happening? It was so sad that parents found out the next day that the school was closing. For me, it's like, what's gonna happen with my son? Where am I gonna take him? They're not giving me enough time to find another school, someone who's going to help him with this IEP.
And you've been there for 12 years, correct?
12 years.
Now, the CEO of Aceto says that the reason for the closing, we heard, are due to a variety of reasons, from declining enrollment to financial issues. Is that something that you observed at Santiago?
To be honest, no. I had Alfredo. Well, first of all, I want to say I have never met Richard Rodriguez. Never met him in my life. I only saw him once, and I didn't even talk to him. So why would you make a decision when you have not stepped a foot into the schools, when you don't know what is going on with your schools? You know, Alfredo, he came to a school many times. He knows that our teachers, when it comes to finances, they're super clean about it. When it comes, you know, to talk to parents, they're really clean, but they're not. They never talk to us. They never, never even mentioned that they were planning on closing one school.
Do you feel the same way, the lack of communication?
Yes, because, again, all this was just dropped on everyone the day of. I know my wife does work there. They were told there were rumors the day of. So, and again, the rumors were
the day of
a couple of schools, and it went from 2 to 7. And then, again, you just see the names of the school on there. We're talking about 2,000 students. And I'm not sure what their plan is to relocate these students, but from what I understood is that the other schools that are staying open can only fit 330 more students.
So you'll have to find where to have
so
your...
So we're talking about displacing 1,700 students, finding them new schools, new neighborhoods.
And, you know, the CTU President Stacey Davis-Gates issued a letter demanding CPS to observe these schools into the district to save them, and they currently have a petition going. What are your thoughts on that?
So obviously petitions do help. We are, you know, asking the CEO of CPS, Pedro Martinez, to... We're holding him accountable. He did say that no school closures under my watch. Yesterday at the board meeting, he was asked about it, about the Acero school situation. He said they were still in talks, but again, as parents, we've been calling and, you know, emailing Acero, we haven't heard from anyone.
Kind of in the dark. And I want to go to you, Lucy. You mentioned that your son is in an individualized education program. What impact do you think these closures will have on students like your son that need that program?
There's not enough schools around to house all these kids with an IEP. Tamayo has 14% of children that have an IEP. All the schools around are going to be saturated. There's not enough special education teachers to cover all those children. I don't understand why would they go ahead and do something like that.
And Reina, Acero did provide us with a statement saying they will be working with families right throughout the transition. We also asked them about their communication about the financial status of the schools. And here's a portion of it. They're saying, in part, Acero Schools addresses a board network financial matters and enrollment issues about board meetings when the network has faced layoffs and made trade-offs required of contract negotiations. Those matters have been communicated, but you're saying they have not been communicated. You been to a meeting?
Yes, I have gone to meetings, and I know a lot of people that have gone to those meetings, and I just want to make this clear. You guys are lying. You guys never, ever communicated that with us. And let's just, one thing. On the meeting, they say they were going to go live and updates on the page. They haven't updated nothing. So that's just telling you those people are just liars. They are heartless people who are only thinking of themselves. They're not thinking of our kids because most of their kids are in college. So they don't care about the kids because they had never gone to those schools. So no, there was never no communication when it came to this. And I just find that, you know, they say they were not going to close good schools. But then again, they're closing seven schools. Not just one, not just two. Seven. Seven schools.
And what do you hope happens now? There's a protest this weekend, correct?
Yes. So what I'm hoping is, again, that they do not close the schools. Obviously, that's what we're all hoping for. But with, just to come back to your statement, I think these financial situations that they're in, the debt they're in, has been there since 2011, 2010. This is not new. They knew all about it, and they kept expanding. They pride themselves on focusing on a small school functioning. And that's what makes it a good school. That's what makes Cisneros, for example, a strong community. It's not even a school. It's a community.
Do you think if you had more time, you would come together to try to find how you can?
Of course. And again, and my message to them is, you know, you're saying low enrollment. Well, what are you doing to improve enrollment? We're looking at the cup half empty instead of half full.
Now, we only have a couple seconds. What are your last thoughts?
We have a protest tomorrow at 3 o'clock on 51st in California. Alderman Raymond Lopez will be there. Alderman 14 will be there. CTU Union will be there. Come and support. I say all the Acero schools, stand up, fight for your school. I'll be having not just this protest, but many more. I'm going to do whatever I can in my power as a mom, as a member of my community, to fight as much as I can.
Thank you, and I can definitely feel the passion.
Can I also share mine, too? Tomorrow at Santiago School, which is located in 2510 West Cortez, we are also having a protest, so please, I invite you to please, all the people that live in the north, please come. And like I said, just want to make a quick statement. Acero, thank you for creating a mom who has a voice for
their
kids.
We're going to have to leave it out there. Thank you so much. Now, up next, tackling a public health problem among some Latino men. Stay with us. HIV and AIDS cases across the country have seen consistent dips overall, except for in young gay Latino men who have seen a spike in HIV cases in recent years. So what's causing the alarming increase and what could be done to combat it? Joining us are Pedro Alonso of Chicago Queer Latin Collaborative And via Zoom, we have Juan Pablo Zapata, Research Assistant Professor and Associate Director of the Lab for Scabled Mental Health at Northwestern University School of Medicine, and Ricardo Jimenez, Director of Health of Public Health Initiatives for the Puerto Rican Culture Center. Thank you all for joining us on this very important topic. Ricardo, I want to start with you. Gay and bisexual Latino men make up the greatest share of new HIV cases. Could you walk us through some of the factors behind this rise?
I think one of the things that one of the factors is the lack of education that is not being given to the community. And I think also since it's been associated with gay men or men who have sex with men, that stigma is very, very persistent in the Puerto Rican and Latino community here. I think one of the things that we have to do, and the last one is that in the schools, in the Chicago public schools, unfortunately, the teaching of HIV and the circumstances around it and how to protect is not being taught. So we have a whole generation of young people who are not educated, not informed, and not being aware of the situation of what HIV can do.
And so where it is today. So you're saying it should be part of sex ed education in public schools?
Without a doubt. I mean, the whole thing to say that we talk about sexuality in school, that you're inviting sex to young people to have sex, it's not, there's no reality to that. Kids are going to have sex matter of you say yes or no. It's the whole thing of that we prepare them and that they can take preventative measures in order to avoid transmission of sexually transmitted infections and, of course, HIV.
And Pedro, your organization recently created a campaign called Preparate, Prep for You and Me. Let's watch part of the ad.
Sure.
Will the daily pill work for my routine?
It's easy to take a pill once a day, when you wake up or before you go to bed.
And if pills don't make sense for you, we'll soon have different types of options such as long-lasting injectables, vaginal rings, and more.
How easy is it to get on PrEP?
You can ask your doctor or any provider you're comfortable with for a prescription.
Can you tell me the importance of these ads?
Absolutely. So when it comes to health promotion campaigns like our Preparate, Prep for You and Me campaign, we wanted to send a more casual, friendly tone around how to have exactly what the conversations that Ricardo mentioned were important to have between individuals, friends, family, on dating, on sex, on what it means to be LGBTQ within the Latinx community and combat that stigma and raise awareness of HIV and the steps that we can take towards preventing it. So that's really what the whole campaign was about. It was produced by local Chicago Latinx LGBTQ artists in collaboration with local ambassadors. And that was the main overall goal of that campaign.
Would you say it's still really important to bring out ads like this?
Absolutely. We need to continue to not only promoting home-brewed or homegrown organic campaigns versus, you know, the flashy marketing-style campaigns. I think the message hits home a little bit closer.
And Juan, I want to go to you. What can you tell us about the local data in Chicago?
Yeah, of course, and thank you so much for having us. And wish I could provide more up-to-date results, but as of 2022, we did see 700 new HIV diagnoses, which is also really similar to like 22,000 people living with HIV that are living in Chicago. I think what really demonstrates like the progress that we've made here in Chicago, at least, is how many programs are expanding access to PrEP. So PrEP is this biomedical pill that you can take daily, which was shown briefly in this ad. And with Latinos specifically, like we see this incredible disparity with, even though they have access to it, they know what it is, there's still so many barriers in place that prevent them from using PrEP, even in cities as large as Chicago. And that's definitely a research priority that we're trying to address at Northwestern.
Awesome. And Ricardo, tell us a bit about your story. How did you get involved in LGBTQ plus advocacy work? Why is this work important to you?
I think when we look at the history of the Puerto Rican Culture Center and then establishing a measure to deal with the reality of what was happening in the 1980s, We knew that at that time, the gay plague, they called it. But when we looked in the community, this is what's not what was happening in our communities. We were seeing other people being infected with HIV. And that's when we saw that, you know, one of the ways of transmission is intravenous drug use. And intravenous drug use leads to people who are having substance abuse problems to look how do they survive. And a lot of them resort to sex work. And this sex work led to in the neighborhood, people use the services, but unfortunately, historically, Latinos and blacks do not use condoms. It's just one of these problems that we've never have really dealt with fully. And then they would have sex, come back to their partners, whoever it may be, and infect them. Eventually, Puerto Ricans come out with an unsubstantial amount of infections, and that reality was reflected that per population, Puerto Ricans are one of the highest rated in HIV infection, not only for men, but also for women. So Puerto Rican Culture Center took it to this measure to make sure that we made a preventive form and deal within the community, and they established Vida Sida. And Vida Sida is, of course, life. And even though you are, and Sida is AIDS, and even though you have AIDS, you have life. And we started dealing with them on a medical level, and then started to go into the community to, in order to deal with a crisis that was being forgotten by the rest
of
the city.
And you have a really long history in Humboldt Park with advocacy. And Pedro, I want to go to you. There's a notable mistrust in the medical system among Latinos and people of color. Can you speak to that a little further?
I'll try to do my best in a short amount of time. But honestly, the issue with HIV in Latino communities and all populations, from a public health perspective, we need to look at our history. We need to look at the way that public health and medicine has treated racial and ethnic minorities, and in particular sexual and gender minorities as well in the history of the U.S. We can look at all of the different examples of mistreatment that's occurred over time and help us understand why today we continue to see mistrust in health, medicine, and science, which also enables and facilitates spread of misinformation and disinformation through today. So we can look back at examples of sterilization of women, of black men being subjected to syphilis, for the sake of science, and it continues to impact us today. One thing I'd like to say in regards to moving forward on this is when we look at who is in the leadership of public health and medicine in regards to, let's say, academic scholars and professors, even though Latinos are 20%, almost 20% of the U.S. population, we are 3-4% of professors of public health and medicine. So we have a huge leadership gap. And that really is, at least for me, the call to action of mobilizing and encouraging Latinos to enter leadership roles in health and medicine.
Thank you. We're going to have to leave it at that. I always wish we have more time. Thank you for all of you for joining on this conversation. Up next, a showcase for designers that aims to inspire. But first, a look at the weather. This weekend, Runway Latinx is bringing a fusion of fashion designers to close out Chicago Fashion Week. Founder Arabel Rosales says she started the fashion show to give back to her community through her organization, Pivoting in Heels. This year marks the 5th anniversary of Runway Latinx, and we stopped by to hear more about what people can expect this weekend.
With Runway Latinx, we do fashion, gastronomy, mixology, and entertainment, all my loves. It is called Shadows in the Light. So that is the theme for this year. And we have people that come in from all over the world. Some of the designers that, you know, have come in this year, Argemilio Sierra is coming in from Colombia.
Siempre pienso mucho en los materiales, en las mezclas de las texturas, en el confort de las telas. Entonces, por ejemplo, esto que se ajuste, entonces que te puedas ver muy bien de tu silueta y, digamos, para una ocasión más especial, pero que estés cómoda. Tocamos es más un universo casual. Entonces es como la cotidianidad de nuestros clientes lo que me, digamos, que me inspira mucho, estar presente como en el día a día de la gente.
I love when people leave, and I've had You know, many young people, for example, leave and say, oh my God, I want to model, or I want to be a designer, or I want to buy a certain look because I want to elevate the way I look and the way I feel. So I love people to leave and say, how can I shimmer more? How can I be that light? Runway Latinx actually was started first, but with the intent, because we had already started the foundation, to the first year, the proceeds to go to Pivoting in Heels. So it goes to benefit, and the proceeds all go to Pivoting in Heels. I've always been very committed to having Chicago on the map. I get to travel all over the world, have gone to many fashion shows, but also different countries, and always talk about the greatness of Chicago. It's our fifth anniversary. We're the closing event for Hispanic Heritage Month, and actually the closing event for Chicago Fashion Week. So we're offering a lot of fashion, gastronomy, mixology, and entertainment. But most especially, I'm hoping, you know, that we are sending out a message that you can be great. And so hopefully you'll leave motivated to support us, you know, Pivoting in Heels, but also support yourself and give back to your communities.
And Rosales says the proceeds from the fashion show will go to the nonprofit Pivoting in Heels, which offers professional development and internships for women. To learn more about the fashion show, visit our website for more details. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30, 7, and 10 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.